Welcome to episode 165 of Behind the Mission, a show that sparks conversations with Sycomer trusted partners and educational experts. My name is Dwayne France, and each week I'll be having conversations with podcast guests that will equip you with tools and resources to effectively engage with and support military service members, veterans, and their families. You can find the show on all the podcast players by going to sycomer.org/podcast. Thanks again for joining us on Behind the Mission. Our work and mission are supported by generous partners who also believe that education changes lives. Our partner this week is PsycArmor, the premier education and learning ecosystem specializing in military culture content. PsycArmor offers an online e-learning laboratory that's free to individual learners as well as custom training options for organizations. On today's episode, I'm having a conversation with Deputy Secretary for Women Veterans of the California Department of Veterans Affairs, Air Force retiree Virginia Wimmer. Deputy Secretary Wimmer served 26 years in the U.S. Air Force as Security Forces, cross-trained to Healthcare Services Manager, and finally retired as a Senior Master Sergeant E-8 in 2012. She did tours in South Korea and Italy and deployed to Afghanistan in support of Operation Enduring Freedom. You can find out more about Virginia by checking out her bio in our show notes. Let's get into my conversation with her and come back afterwards to talk about some of the key points. Virginia, thank you so much for taking the time to have a conversation today about your work supporting women veterans in California. Before we start to talk about your role and what you do, though, I'd like to hear a little bit more about you and why this work's so important to you.
Thank you. So a little bit about me. I think you already know I spent most of my adult life in the Air Force. So that in itself brought me into this world. That's how I got into this, right? When I retired from the Air Force, I never thought that this is the space I'd be working in. In fact, what I thought I'd be doing was working in a hospital. I thought I was going to be some sort of a medical administrator. I thought perhaps I'd be in human resources, helping to maybe hire doctors and nurses. Maybe I'd be working, I don't know, emergency department or something like that as an administrator of some sort. But some higher power had something different in mind and said, no, we're going to use your talents to serve other veterans. Did I know I had that talent? Absolutely not. Then I also learned that it's not so much of a talent, it's more of a passion. So I like to say that this passion chose me. That's what I call it, a passion. And this passion chose me. I didn't choose it. And what I learned is that whole time I was in the Air Force, I was learning skills. I was learning to hone this passion so that I can serve others. Because the whole time I was there, I was learning to become more of an empath, which I did not know that I was until just recently someone told me, oh, Virginia, I see that you're an empath. I was like, what? I'm not an empath. What are you talking about? Apparently, I feel things differently than others. Who would have thunk it? I would have never thought that about myself. So that's what brought me here. Now, what brought me into the space of specifically women veterans? I will say that was Governor Gavin Newsom. He decided, hey, I see what you're doing out there. Come and help us do that here at the California Department of Veterans Affairs here in CalVet. Because prior to me arriving here at CalVet, I was a county veteran service officer. So I worked in the county of San Joaquin. And prior to this county of San Joaquin, I worked in the county of Solano. Prior to that, I was on active duty. So yeah, I've been just riding on this ladder, serving veterans, because veterans have been serving me all my life. It's not lost on me that I stand on the shoulder of giants. That is not lost on me that as a woman, there's a lot of women that went before me. There are a lot of not just women veterans, not just service women, but men, Buffalo soldiers that went before me to say, hey, let me go ahead and smooth this path for you, so that it can be a little bit smoother for you. The Korean War veterans, the Vietnam veteran, the first Gulf War veteran, all of those veterans that went before me smooth this path so that I can continue to serve these veterans that we're serving today. So that's how I got here. That's a little bit about me. And I'm going to keep this work going because it's that important that veterans like me and you just keep serving until every veteran has her story or his story told.
You know, I appreciate how you put that. And that's true for many who retired, is the majority of our adult lives was spent in the military. And then that idea of what do I want to do after the military? You said that you thought you were going to be a hospital administrator, something in HR. I always said I didn't know what I wanted to be until I grew up, until I was 15 years in the military, yeah. Right? I always thought I was going to be one of those high school English or history teachers. Like, you get them talking about the war and then you don't get homework. Like, I always saw myself as a teacher. And then it wasn't until, as you said, those God moments or those universe winks that sort of put you in that. I'm curious for you, was that idea of what you were going to do in the military, was that a long-term thing, or you just said, I'll figure that out later?
No. When I was at the recruiter's office, I just really, I was on a whim too. That's a whole nother story. We'll do that another time. But no, I never thought I'd be a lifer. Didn't think I was going to be a lifer either. It was always one of those things, just, I'm going to do it one more time. One more enlistment. I'm going to pay off one more credit card. Going to pay off one more car. That thing, always one more assignment. I'm going to go do this, want to see one more thing type of thing. And then next thing you know, patriotism didn't come to a lot later. Like you just said, maybe around that 12-year mark, I was like, oh, hold on. Not my United States of America. Not this. So the patriotism came a little later for me, of course. The thing that made me stay so long, I will tell you, was when I found out, it became not so much about me, and it became about my family, and not just the two beautiful daughters that I had and my husband, but it became about my fellow airmen, right? That part of my family. When I started to feel I couldn't give up on them, that part of the family, that extended part of the family, when my colleagues became more and more important to me, that made me want to stay one more enlistment. When I saw some of my subordinates get promoted, when I saw them get married or have children, or when I saw them go through their trials and tribulations and they overcame things, and it made you grow up to become, I guess, that empathetic empath that I became. I remember thinking how it worked, like working. I went from security forces and then I cross-trained into the medical career field. I remember going from security forces into the medical career field. And as security forces, we used to say that those that worked in a hospital were not in the real Air Force. They're like, they're not real Air Force. And I remember always thinking how having that security forces training and then becoming a medic, those two worlds, how they collided. And just, I think that made me a better airman as well, because I could easily help people understand how important it was to have that camaraderie, the importance of, yes, we have a mission, but behind that mission was a human. So put the human factor in this mission first. You know what I'm saying? That all that, those worlds colliding together. No, I didn't see that part. You know, I didn't see, like, I'm staying here for 26 years. Who does that? I don't know. Whoever thinks, like, I'm staying here for 20 years. I do hear people say that I'm going to join the Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines. I'm staying for 26 years. Really? That was not Virginia. However, I did stay most of my adult life. I'm proud to have done it. People say, do you miss it? No, I do not miss it. Folks ask me all the time, oh, would you go back to taxi? No, I would not do that again. But I'm grateful that I did.
Yeah, I like that. And even your background, this idea of, you were in law enforcement. You were talking earlier about being a woman veteran and being a Black woman veteran in the law enforcement field, and all of the intersectionality of your different identities. And then bringing that to the role that you're at now in CalVet. You're the Deputy Secretary of Women Veterans Division for CalVet. California, one of the largest veteran populations in the country, subsequently one of the largest women veteran populations, but also a very diverse women veterans population. You're talking about geographically, ethnically, racially, age-wise, supporting such a wide range of women veterans in California is likely pretty complicated.
It is, and it isn't, right? The complications are, as I think I started out saying before, when we're in the military, we're wearing that service member, right? We wear that. We wear it daily. You wear it proudly. You wear your uniform proudly, right? Once you transition, most women no longer wear anything that says, I served. That's the difficult part. She's not wearing anything that says, I served. She doesn't wear anything that says, I'm a veteran. Unlike the male veteran who's wearing the hat, he's wearing the baseball cap, he's got the pin, he's got the t-shirt, he's wearing the sweatshirt. She doesn't wear that. Even if she is physically disabled, very seldom does our society, attribute our physical disability to having served in military. They don't put those two things together. Oftentimes, our disabilities are not very physical, and you can't see my disability, right? But I tell you, if you could see me now, this is what a veteran looks like. I am what a veteran sounds like. So she's not wearing her veteran on the outside. So that's what makes it difficult for us. Yes, we are diverse, absolutely, and not just through a racial lens. Our diversity, of course, is what makes us strong and what makes us powerful. Yes, it is. We are by no means monolithic. But the hard part about reaching a woman veteran, not just in the state of California, but particularly here in the state of California, is a lot of us are not wearing our veteran on the outside. She's just not visible, but I will tell you, she definitely is not invisible. She's in the boardroom. She's on the legislation. She's the deputy secretary for Women Veterans Affairs. Yes, yes, she's a truck driver. She's a teacher. She's a mom. She's a sister. She's a wife. She's out here. She's doing it. She's one of the most powerful women in California. But oftentimes, she's not wearing that veteran status on the outside. So that's the hard part. But I want her to know, if she can hear my voice, I want her to know that she is not invisible. Although she may not be wearing the hat, she may not be wearing the pin, she doesn't have to wear the sweatshirt. I see her, I hear her, and I respect her. And if she wants to tell her story whenever she's ready, I'm ready to listen. And whatever it is that she wants me to say on her behalf, I'm ready to take it to the state. I'm ready to take it to the decision makers on her behalf so that they know that she is not invisible and that her story is powerful and that her story, no matter how loud or how soft that she wants to tell her story, makes her story no less true than yours or mine.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And as things are changing, and obviously as the global war on terror, and even as you were mentioning before, the first Gulf War, and I joined in the early 90s, and I served with women my entire military career. Some of the strongest non-commissioned officers that I consider mentors were women. My company commander, when I was deployed to Afghanistan, the most significant combat, was a woman. So I served with, for, and led women throughout my military career. And especially, again, this global war on terror generation, women are making up more and more of the percentage of the military, and they are a visible minority when they're in the military, right? When you have such a large group of 20, 25%, you hit a tipping point and you're a very visible minority. And then when women veterans leave the service, they become a much smaller slice of the larger veteran, millions of veteran population. And that's where then, in again, owning it, a lot of veterans in previous generations consider it becomes an invisible minority. They're not invisible themselves, but they're really lost. They lose their voice. They lose the strength of the group of the advocate.
Yeah. And thank you for recognizing, and thank you for being an ally. And that's one thing that we say, we understand as women veterans, we are 2 million strong nationwide, 160,000 here in the state of California, 32,000 still on active duty in the Guard and Reserves here in our 32 bases that we have in the state of California. We know that we are here. Again, we recognize one another and we uplift one another and highlight each other's contributions. But we need allies like you to say what you just said. Like, we understand. She's always been there. She was there during the Revolutionary War before the states united and called themselves the United States. She was always there. We get it. We understand that as women veterans, we can't be in a room by ourselves talking to ourselves because then we become an echo chamber. And in an echo chamber, then it's just a gripe session. We don't want a gripe session. In that room, we want that room filled. We want that room filled with others that don't necessarily look like us. We want that room filled with folks who are against us. We need you in that room so you can hear us. We need you to hear our stories. Even if you don't necessarily agree that someone like me should have been wearing the uniform, just listen to my story. Just look at me. Just see me. That's all we ask. Look at me, see me, so that you understand I didn't do this for me. I did it for you. I did it for our country. That's all we ask that you recognize and understand, because then it becomes an allyship. Then we become in this together. so that you understand it wasn't about me. It was about us as a country. We understand that. We just want others to understand that as well. So we don't want to be in a vacuum, and we don't want to be in an echo chamber, if you will. We want allies in the room with us. So we need our brothers to hear us so that they can do what you just did, multiply our story. But we want to tell our stories because they are our stories. My experience is just that. And my experience in the military and my experience post-military should never offend anyone. My experience in the military and my experience transitioning the military should not be offensive to anyone. I am grateful that my experience in the military, through all the trials and tribulations, I do not have any regrets of anything that I went through, because as the saying goes, that does not kill you, only makes you stronger. I feel that I've become a stronger woman for everything that I've gone through. Some things were very unfair. Some things were harmful and hurtful. But look at me now. I've emerged a stronger woman for it. I have two beautiful grown women daughters. I'm married to my husband. In fact, today is our 32nd or 33rd. He's probably going to choke me. Hopefully he won't hear this. But I know today is our anniversary. I can't tell you that. We met on active duty. So I'm grateful for that. Even through all those trials and tribulations, again, everything was not fair. I was just having a conversation a few weeks ago with an older veteran who served during Vietnam era, Gulf War era, and Army. I want to tell you, she did Navy, Army, and Air Force. Several branches of service. I want to tell you, she did Guard, Reserve, and active duty. So this is a woman who was a hard charger, go-getter. She went through some things, but she didn't stop. And we laughed and we cried together over things like this. Every wrinkle, every scar, every bar, every enlistment, everything. We earned those. Every tear, we earned them. And we look back and say, but look at us now. Look at us.
And that idea, yes, you earned them, and no one else earned the right to take them away from you. Like, that's the other piece, though, is you said that's your story, and I or no one else have the right or should have the ability to say that your service was any less or any more than anyone else's.
And that's the point we're trying to make. That's it. We just want, and we want other women, we want to share those stories because we want other women veterans to be able to share her story. We want her to know that it's okay. Some women are not coming forward sharing their story. They don't want to participate in the Department of Veterans Affairs benefits and services because while she was on active duty, someone said to her, or while she was in the uniform, someone may have said to her, you were just A or you were only A. That should never matter. When we were all in that uniform, we were all just a grunt. We were all just a... At one point, they broke us all down to our brake pads to build us all back up. Again, her story is just as powerful. And so she earned her stripes. She earned her bar. She earned every crow's feet, every wrinkle. And she should be able to tell her story. And she should be able to participate in every benefit. She should be able to participate in every service and every support that not only the CalVet has to offer, but the Department of Veterans Affairs, that every other veteran service organization or every other ally that is supporting veterans has to offer as well. And that is what we want for all of our women veterans. And that's what's important.
And that's what I really value. And again, this idea of CalVet, the California Department of Veterans Affairs, specifically, your role is to support women veterans. This is, as you said, the governor putting the money where the mouth is. And it's, so you've talked about your own lived experience, the nature of your work supporting women veterans in California. What can you tell us about some of the programs and resources available through the CalVet Women Veterans Division?
So aside from our advocacy, because that's the number one thing, our advocacy is what we do first and foremost. And that is, we pride ourselves on being the connectors, right? It is my role with connecting women veterans to those resources that provide services and support to women veterans, because we provide indirect services. So my role is to ensure that women veterans are getting connected to those services and support that they need throughout their military life cycle. So once she is starting her transition from whether it's the Guard, the Reserves, or active duty, is to make sure that she's getting those services and support that she needs And we want her to start with CalVet, start with my office, and my staff will help her go through the CalTAP program so she can learn what benefits that she's entitled to. We know that the Department of Labor and VA has the TAP program, and that's an awesome program. We want them to go through that awesome program, but we know what that is. That is information by fire hose. We know that, but we take that once they get all that information. We'd like to take that and we break it down in bite-sized pieces for them through the CalTAP program so that they learn, okay, this is what the claim process is and this is what it looks like. And we hook them up with a county veteran service officer. We try to give them one-on-one services, especially when they need that more intimate service, specifically when it comes to medical services and medical support when they're going through the claims process, right? Because to be open and frank, let's be honest, you're still a man's world. When you're going through that claims process and when you're talking medical conditions, a lot of times we focus on a lot of the same medical conditions, but a lot of people don't know when we're talking to women veterans, when you and I were serving, you got to remember the boots I wore were made for men. The PPE I wore was made for men. So you can imagine someone at the time, I had a slender frame. So that flak vest sat very low on my hips. And it wore down my bladder and my hips. Therefore, I have some issues internally. Those things we have to talk to women about. We have to talk to them about incontinence. We have to talk to them about infertility. So we try to hook them up with women who specialize in that, those healthcare issues. So those are some of the services and support that we can provide them with. Not here directly at CalVet, but I pride myself on a thing I like to say, it's my job to know it. I should say know a girl, but to know a guy, if you will. So we are the hub to the spokes, if you will.
I like that concept. Even going back to what you were saying before, is a young woman or perhaps a career woman who's leaving the military may have been told at some point in the past, you don't deserve this or you don't belong here. And they have that in their mind. But we know veterans listen to other veterans. And if one of your staff goes and says, listen, sister, that's not true. Like there's the peer aspect of, and the same thing happened to me. Somebody was like, hey, you help all these veterans. Where are you doing with your claim? But for a woman veteran to hear from another woman veteran, you deserve this. Don't think you don't. That's powerful.
It's absolutely powerful. And that's exactly what we do. We tell them, our CalTAP folk talk directly to them. Mm-hmm. And again, we hook them up with county veteran service officers who actually file the claim, who are culturally competent, culturally sensitive, who share their best interest, and they help them, and they help them directly. And they talk to them about these particular services and support, and they delve into these issues that, again, when you're on active duty, you don't tell people like, I'm having some problems. I'm having issues. Men might talk about, hey, bro, I'm having a little bit, yeah, you know, that. Women don't often talk about, I'm having sexual dysfunction. How do you even bring that up? But that happens. But when you're sitting with one of the county veteran service officers who's been properly trained and who has this knowledge, she can say to a woman veteran, are you having issues? Do you have sexual dysfunction? Has anybody ever talked to you about that? Have you been screened for this? Do you know that you can be compensated? There's special compensation for. And these women veterans are clutching their pearls. Wait a minute. Hold on. Nobody's ever told me about that. No one in the DOD has ever talked to me about that. They don't, because the DOD is not thinking about these things. But yeah, here in the state of California, we are sharing this information with our county veteran service officers. And that's because we have a deputy secretary for Women Veterans Affairs who's always thinking, because she's using, like you said, I'm using my lived experience. I'm using all of my knowledge, and I'm using all of the people that I work with here in California, my internal stakeholders, my external stakeholders. I'm using everybody that I work with to make sure we're serving women veterans how they want to be served, where they want to be served, when they want to be served, at every level. Not just people think that veterans, all veterans experience homelessness or all veterans are experiencing substance use disorder. That is not true. Or that we're all experiencing post-traumatic stress. That's simply not true. We don't all have all of the same experiences. Some of us are experiencing urinary incontinence. You can't see that. You can't see that on a woman veteran. Some of us are experiencing infertility issues. You can't see that on her. Some of us have intrusive thoughts and intrusive dreams. You can't see that on a woman veteran. So these are the things that we try to ensure that our service providers, our county veteran service officers, we share all of these things. We go to trainings together. These are the things that we do to ensure that these are services and support that we provide to our service providers so that they can provide these services support to our women veterans, specifically those who are transitioning from the military.
Yeah, no, I think that's amazing. And again, just the idea of there is a department, like there is meat behind this, so to speak. So if people wanted to find out more, if they're in California, if they're women veterans in California, or even if they're in another state, they're saying, hey, how can we do that? How is this set up for our state? How can they find more about the CalVet Women Veterans Division?
So to find out more, of course, they could just email me directly at virginia.wimmer@calvet.ca.gov. They could look us up at calvet.ca.gov. So of course, they can look us up that way. But there are about nationwide, about 32 states that has a position dedicated definitely for women veterans. Not all states have a woman dedicated at every level, but we're working on that. We are working on that. But where there's not a woman veteran advocate, between the 32 of us, we will serve her. We will serve the 2 million. It's okay. All women veterans are welcome. Welcome through CalVet. We don't care if you're on the state, you're in the state of Mars. If Mars is a state, but quite honestly, we really don't care where you live or if you need services and support, we will definitely reach out or we will help you get connected to some services and support no matter where you are.
That's great. Now make sure that all of those links are in the show notes. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. And it's always good to talk with you.
Once again, we would like to thank this week's partner, PsychArmor. PsychArmor is the premier education and learning ecosystem specializing in military culture content. PsychArmor offers an online e-learning laboratory that's free to individual learners, as well as custom training options for organizations. I'm glad to have been able to share this conversation with Deputy Secretary Wimmer with you. Virginia and I have connected a couple of times in relation to our mutual work supporting the development of suicide prevention coalitions for service members, veterans, and their families. And I always appreciate her passion and perspective. A couple of things that came up for me during this conversation. First, I'm always a fan of service members continuing their service in the public or nonprofit sector after the military. After I retired, I found myself working for a nonprofit and pursued higher education related to public administration after my degree in clinical mental health counseling. I don't think that enough veterans, especially retirees who are senior non-commissioned officers or field grade officers, consider the value that they might bring to a nonprofit or governmental organization. There's the decades of experience in training, planning, coordination, and doing a lot of stuff with limited resources, all of the things that are needed in the public or nonprofit sector. Not only that, we all know that money isn't everything, but the fact is that retirement pay and disability pay, if you qualify for it, can offset some of the limited compensation one might expect from a nonprofit job. So I always encourage retirees to consider a post-military career in the nonprofit sector, to continue their service to their fellow service members in a different way. The other thing that came up for me was the concept of bridging gaps through connection. We see it every day. As we're recording this, our country is divided, our communities are divided, and I'm referring both to our geographic communities and our social communities. But I think back to what Virginia mentioned. You don't have to agree with us. You don't have to understand us. We just need you to hear us. You need to listen to our experiences without discounting them. Listen to our perspectives without disbelieving them. Divisions are heightened by misunderstanding, and misunderstanding is produced by a lack of connection between the groups. So deliberately connect with those you do not understand in order to reduce misunderstanding and decrease divisions. That applies to this discussion about women veterans, of course, but also applies to the gap between the veteran community and those who have never served. It's stepping into the gap and having necessary and potentially uncomfortable conversations. But maybe the only way out of the crisis of division that we have is by connection, not by avoidance. So I hope you appreciated my conversation with Virginia. If you did, we'd appreciate hearing from you. Drop a review in your podcast player of choice or send us an email at info@psycharmor.org. For this week's PsychArmor Resource of the Week, I'd like to share the PsychArmor course, Hiring and Retaining Women Veterans. At the end of this course, you'll be in a better position to bring visibility to the most invisible group of veterans, and you'll have some actionable tips on how to help level the playing field for women veterans at your organizations. Find a link to the resource in our show notes. So thanks again for taking the time to listen to this episode. Make sure to take a look at the show notes, which you can find in the podcast app, as well as on the PsychArmor website at psycharmor.org/podcast. While you're there, you can find hundreds of online training videos delivered by nationally recognized subject matter experts who are all committed to educating the non-military community about military culture. All of these courses are free to individual learners. You wouldn't be listening if you didn't care, and it's that curiosity and passion for supporting service members, veterans, and their families that we want to encourage and increase. Come back each week for another conversation and make sure to engage with PsychArmor on social media to let us know what you thought about the show. I'd like to express special thanks to Operation Encore and Navy Seahawk pilot Jerry Maniscalco for our theme song, Don't Kill the Messenger. This show was produced by Headspace and Timing, and all rights to the show remain reserved by PsychArmor. Much appreciation to the team at PsychArmor that makes this show happen. Carol Turner, Vice President of Strategic Communications, who keeps me on track and is an outstanding guest coordinator, and support and transcript by Emma Atherall. Feel free to share the show. In fact, we request that you do, but make sure to let folks know where you heard it. Join us next time for another great episode, and until then, stay aware, get educated, and be well.